Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to James Bonding. My name's Matt.
My name is also Matt.
And occasionally we like to have someone who isn't as well-versed in the Bond world as, say, maybe Matt and I, who ourselves aren't even experts. We're just lovers. But we brought in one of my favorite people, Molly Hockey, to kind of take her through the first ever James Bond movie. Hi, Molly.
Hi, how are you guys?
Molly, welcome. If you're going to be a fan, this is the place to start. Doctor No. I mean, wow. Come on.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's not representative, really, of a lot of the James Bond franchise because it hadn't yet established a lot of the things that people know and love from a Bond movie or know and hate from a Bond movie. But it is a good place to start. First of all, how you doing? What's going on?
I'm great. Am I great? Because I did just... My car won't start.
So that's weird. I know.
That's not normal.
Unfortunate, yeah.
Did anything happen when you turned the key, or was it just battery?
And then as I each time I tried, that got a little less.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So what do we think?
That's the battery.
Well, I'm wondering if this podcast episode itself is cursed because your car wouldn't start. Eunice Gayson passed away this early this morning.
And I was late because I had a warning on my car and had to get tire filled up.
Tire filled up,
which is worse, I think, than Eunice Gayson passing.
Oh, oh my God.
I beg to differ with that.
I mean, Sylvia Trench had some low pressure.
I know. She dies on the day that we're doing the Dr. No episode.
The morning after I watched the movie for the very first time.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I better not watch any more movies.
Exactly. We should stop. We have to stop.
And you can't do the podcast.
Any movies ever.
Ever. No movies.
You watching a movie kills a minor player in that film. What's the other last movie you've seen?
I can't think of a movie I've seen recently. I've been so busy.
Yeah. Well, you're busy with something that is amazing and worth talking about, too, because it kind of relates to Matt's other podcast. We're actually going to talk a little bit about it on this show in terms of James Bond, but your podcast, Spermcast, Molly, tell us about it.
Okay, well, Spermcast is my quest for a sperm donor.
Personally, your own quest for a sperm donor.
My own personal quest for a sperm donor. And by the end of it, I'm hoping to inseminate myself.
Sounds amazing.
Wow. Isn't it?
Yeah. And it's also, so in each episode, I interview potential sperm donors, but I'm also looking for some personal growth. So I'm also cutting away to people that know more stuff about this, doctors or... just my mom or Amanda.
It's amazing.
Matt's wife,
yeah.
Amanda.
Sure.
But
sure.
It's so well produced and so well thought out.
Thank you.
Such an interesting idea for a podcast. It both, you know, handles it in a lighthearted way, but also a serious way without being overly serious. You know, it's really
that's
refreshing.
Representative of my life.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I have a nice balance of deep darkness and like over the top happy joy. I think it's an effort to try to make people feel comfortable. So
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So every time it's bad. I mean, every time I've been to a therapist, they're like, you know, your laughter is a defense mechanism. I'm like, I know. So if I'm telling somebody something sad, I immediately laugh right after to make them know that, hey, I'm okay. Don't worry about me.
But there are worse defense mechanisms to have, certainly, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that begs the question, which James Bond would be the best sperm donor for you? I'm bringing up a picture of the 6 official James Bonds.
Oh, okay.
And we can give you a
can
basic.
Can I come over to you?
Yeah.
And look.
You can take that mic off. Oh, it won't come under the table.
Talk to your mic.
Okay. So.
Name them.
All right. On the left here. Well, we'll go in order. The Sean Connery, which
he was pretty great last night.
Yeah. Baby. What time did you watch it?
8 p.m. Ooh, the sexy hour of Friday.
Prime time.
Best time.
So he's very virile, manly, classically, traditionally male in mm-hmm. all terms of misogyny. But maybe
yeah,
that's
yeah.
a learned
quick question.
Trait.
Are they all pigs?
No.
Okay.
Well.
Disagree.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Dalton's not terribly.
He's the least broken but still broken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a character trait inherent in James Bond. So, but he's the first, okay, Connery. Mm. Then second, you've got the one-timer back here, George Lazenby, who is a real like how would you describe him? Like kind of like a what a douche is today. He's a little
gross.
Bit more of a bro man.
I'd call him he's like the he's the Australian equivalent of a Bachelor contestant.
Yeah.
Oh, I know all about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that goes
that
under
won't
the table.
Reach.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, not to disparage him, his movie's really good, but he's a little bit. He's also the only Bond that gets married in the series.
Oh, okay.
He settles down. He settles down.
Committed kind of guy.
That's right.
Quick question.
Yeah.
How many episodes was Connery in? I mean, not episodes.
he did six.
Six.
But
okay.
then he did a seventh unofficial film in the 80s.
Okay.
Then comes Roger Moore, who's the most suave and lighthearted and good-humored and just kind of dapper and campy and a little...
He's your quintessential one-liner James Bond.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's the kind of guy that will kill someone and then have a funny quip about it.
Yeah. But he's the gentlest of them, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
He looks pretty handsome.
Yeah, I find him handsome, too. Next up is Dalton, who was the
first... Wait, sorry. How many was Roger Moore in?
He's seven. Yeah. He did the most.
Okay.
But Daniel Craig, though he's done less films, has now eclipsed his tenure. So he's been Bond longer, but having done less films.
But he's not wearing a tie.
No, but we'll get to him in a second.
Okay.
So next up is Dalton. He only did two films, and he's very serious, a little humorless, but also honorable, respectable, I'd say, dignified.
So Dalton only goes by the one name?
No, Timothy Dalton.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be great? Dalton as James Bond. Dalton. 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 And then comes this guy, I forget his name.
Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
I'm a pro.
Yeah. He's kind of a combination.
I know him from Doubtfire.
Between Roger Moore and Connery. He's trying to have it all ways, and it doesn't quite work.
Look, he's, for my money, he's the most bang for your buck. You know, you're going to get someone who's handsome, has the deck stacked against him as far as scripts are concerned.
Oh.
But he does the best job he can, and quite frankly, some of us don't think it's a great job, but I do.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
And then you've got Daniel Craig, who is the modern-day blunt instrument, my personal favorite, but I don't know how much dad material he is, so you're not...
I'm not a fan.
You're not
I'm
a
not
fan.
Attracted to him in any way whatsoever.
Really, I am. Look at him.
We are. Two out of three of us are very attracted to him.
Okay, so any questions before you
How many did Brosnan do?
Oh, four.
Not that this affects whether
it's his
good
stamina, his longevity,
sure.
His life expectancy. Dalton did two.
Dalton only
partially
two.
Not his fault. He was going to do a third, but it got into a legal mess.
Okay. So I have seen I know I've definitely seen at least one with Brosnan and Daniel.
Uh-huh.
Can't remember which ones though.
Okay, that's all right.
And I didn't like either of them, so they're off the list. Now, that sneaky guy in the back, what's his name again?
This guy, Lazenby.
You know, yeah, he's a commitment kind of guy, you know, with the marriage and all that.
That's true, but one film, and he bailed on the franchise.
He bailed? It was his choice?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he thought the square life of Bond was done. It was time for counterculture beards and long hair and stuff.
Oh, cool. So does he look like that in real life?
Like this?
No, with beards
not
and long
anymore,
hair.
But he did. He had a beard and longer
that's
hair.
Kind
do
of
you want to see a picture?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. His name's pretty funny, too.
George Lazenby.
Ooh, I like him.
Oh, wow.
How tall is he?
He's pretty tall. They're
I
all
like
pretty
beards.
Tall. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, okay. So go back to the guys.
Okay.
And Dalton, he looks like Bill Nye.
I could see that. I mean, he's
but Bill Nye's a good looking guy.
Yeah, sure.
Bill Nye's a good looking guy, smart.
Okay.
So I'm assuming they have the same kind of intelligence. okay, so I'm stuck between Connery and Roger Moore. And I'm going to say because Sean was so piggy last night. And he was so sexy, but also like, God, dude.
Yeah.
Take a fucking chill pill.
Right.
Don't fucking, I don't know. Who's that secretary? Moneypenny?
Moneypenny, yeah.
Ugh, that was gross. He was sitting on her chair. Do they ever have a relationship?
No, though it's hinted at in Skyfall that perhaps.
Hmm. Doesn't like what's her name? The the lady with the short Judi Dench.
Oh yeah.
Is she Moneypenny at some point?
No, she plays M, his boss.
Oh,
in the later movies.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Is Moneypenny in every movie?
Mostly.
Does she change?
She does change.
Do they change? Do they coincide?
What do you mean?
Do they change bonds and change money pennies at the
usually,
same time?
Usually, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Times
anyway,
change.
I guess
I'll get to the answer. Okay. My answer is going to be Roger Moore because I haven't seen him yet. But you guys said he's like a little bit more chill with the misogyny. And
No, in his defense, he at first was not, but I think he fought to have the character toned down and be less abusive and such. So it does sort of,
in fairness to Molly, as she chooses her father, the father of her child.
Yeah.
I think that the toned downness was on the violence end of it, and I don't think he ever sort of was going for the tone down of the sexism / womanizing.
Tells you anything, though. Connery actually, I think, was involved in domestic violence. So was Roger Moore, but he was the victim of.
Okay. I like him. Because I didn't want somebody I can throw around.
Okay, there
I mean,
it is.
He's going to be in my life from now on, right?
Yeah, I think.
Oh, that's not how sperm donors work.
Oh,
well,
not?
He also passed away a year ago.
Oh, I guess I'm just looking for a husband then.
Yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, on my birthday.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Okay, so okay, Roger Moore it is. Congratulations. I think you made a wise choice. We're big fans of Roger Moore on
this
podcast.
Yeah, we think of him as the. As the father we never really wanted.
as a husband, though, I know you're not looking for a husband, but as a husband, I think
I'm not
that's
not
a pretty
looking
good
for
choice.
A husband,
well, how would you feel about, say, moving to a gambling mecca on the south of France to escape taxes? How would you feel about that?
I'd be into it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's what Roger Moore did.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Lived out his life just on the south of France.
That's right.
To avoid paying taxes to the British.
What's Monte Carlo? What is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Molly, do you have a history with the Bond franchise at all? Did you ever see any as a kid? And it's okay if you didn't.
No, no.
Because we like
all types. No, the only
ones
I've seen are the Daniel Craig.
Do you remember which one? Casino Royale?
Maybe.
Skyfall?
Which one's more recent?
Spectre.
What? No.
No? Skyfall's more recent than...
I think I saw Casino Royale, though, like, a while ago. And then Pierce Brosnan, I saw at least one.
Okay.
What were his?
Great. All great. GoldenEye.
GoldenEye.
Tomorrow Never Dies, which was out at the same time as Titanic.
I've heard of all these things. Does that help?
The World Is Not Enough.
Gosh. Mm-hmm.
And Die Another Day.
I don't know.
Hmm.
So weird.
Okay, so but Dr. No.
Dr. No.
This is the first James Bond. This is 1962.
It's funny. It did kind of look familiar, though, as if maybe I had seen it when I was a kid.
But, you know, like this stuff has been in the cultural zeitgeist for 50 plus years. They often show the clip of him saying Bond, James Bond, because it's the first time.
Uh-huh.
But as I believe maybe Phil pointed out, it's interesting to note because Eunice Gayson passed away last night. That she actually says Trench, Sylvia Trench.
I noticed
and sets
that.
The trend for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's the way that Bond asks the question. Miss.
Yes, Trench, Sylvia
going
Trench.
Up on the
but
miss.
Truly, behind every man is a great woman, I think, you know. Sylvia Trench.
she's a fascinating character because I noticed for the first time last night that she's wearing a wedding ring.
Oh, you watched it again?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We always
rewatch.
I didn't notice the wedding ring,
I
but
did.
I got
neither.
The vibe of married woman when I first saw her.
Yeah.
And then I was like, ooh.
That's interesting, because she also shows up in the next movie, and they're hanging out in a little Riverside.
Which, by the way, has to establish her as the most steady girlfriend he ever had.
That's right.
To last over two movies.
Yeah.
That's the only one that crossed both.
Yeah. Yeah, but also, like, what I like about Sylvia, I really spent a lot of time with Sylvia last night. Weirdly, I didn't know that she died.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I must have put something out into the world. But anyway, she was great.
Maybe she made you guys watch this.
Or maybe she felt like...
Maybe it was the triumvirate of us watching that sent some sort of signal into the universe.
She's like, I'm finally getting recognized for what I deserve. Oh, I'm ready to pass on.
Maybe it was like death had come to her and said, Eunice, I cannot take you until there are three people watching that movie again.
Oh. Did we find out how she died?
I'm assuming...
She's 90.
Right, but something I only read the headlines, and something said was found dead in her home.
It wasn't
in the hospital. You can look.
Well, I think when you're 90,
maybe she was.
When you're 90, you're more surprised to be found alive.
No.
What?
90's nothing. 90's yeah. young.
90's the new 85.
Totally. What's that book?
This is the James Bond archives. This book, and I was gonna pop it open here with some Sylvia. Sylvia action. Yeah, it's the heaviest book there's ever been.
Did you guys make this book?
Yeah, we put it out under a different name, and we agreed never to see a dime from it. That's just the kind of people we are.
Listen to this. Gayson said in 2012 that filming the scene had not been as easy as Sean Connery struggled with the line. She said he had to say Bond, James Bond, but he came out with other permutations like Sean Bond, James Connery, cut, cut, cut. At the instigation of director Terrence Young, Gayson took Mr. Connery for a drink and he returned to deliver it perfectly. Sylvia Trench was due to be a recurring character, but the idea was dropped by the director of Goldfinger, Guy Hamilton. But while Gayson is the only woman to appear as the same Bond girl in two movies, Sylvia Trench also appears in a clinch with 007 and From Russia with Love. Her voice is not heard in either of them. As with many of the Bond girls in the 1960s and 1970s, her lines were re-recorded by voiceover artist Nikki Vanderzil. Wow. Doesn't say how she passed away, though.
But what I was saying about her, which I found interesting, I was like, she's a woman. She's out at 2 o'clock in the morning at this casino. She's got nice lines of credit. She's playing Baccarat. And then, you know, when Bond asks her if she likes to play any other game, she's like into golf. Like, she seems to be the female James Bond.
It's true. Yeah. She's the first.
Like, really?
Jinx. Yeah.
And I think the wedding ring, her having the wedding ring, really sort of like
that's
galvanized that for me.
That's a M Loft for sure.
Yeah.
And then
Matt Myra's look out for this. And I have a Gloft. And you can have an M Loft too if you have something like that.
Molly. Hawk M Hall.
You could just M Loft.
You can have a Hloft. You can have a Hloft.
So what were your first impressions of this film?
Well, my very first impressions were cool retro designs in the beginning.
Yeah,
I know. I like that opening title sequence.
It's interesting. It seemed like there were three opening credits. Mm-hmm. What's up with that?
That's a good question. I think my best guess, and maybe I've read this somewhere, I don't know, is that they're taking three separate pieces of music and almost doing like an entre-act, like the way a musical would. Like, mm-hmm. here are some of the things you're going to hear throughout the film.
Uh-huh.
That's the Bond theme, the Underneath the Mango Tree, and Three Blind Mice.
Gotcha.
I don't know if that's the case, but that combined with the kind of like Saul Bass Hitchcockian titles and stuff feels like it's still of an older era of filmmaking that would be something that wouldn't be a surprise. Much like a longer movie would have an intermission that would play and you'd go out or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that seems like it might be.
I really enjoyed it. This is the first time I noticed a few things about this film, Matt.
Yeah.
Molly. Guys. Buckle up. These three blind mice guys, there's no reason for them to be pretending to be blind for such a long walk.
Like, they could get there.
And wait, I gotta add to that.
Yes.
They do this walk for so long, but then when they actually come into contact with the guy that they're going to kill, he puts his cup out, pointing it towards the guy. Like, he knows the guy's there.
Well, you know, it's just, it's...
And it gives it away to the guy.
That he
doesn't
would
give
see?
It away because he doesn't notice, but...
You don't think he could hear him coming?
Maybe he had super hearing, like a Daredevil situation.
Because I was like, they're just blowing it. They're blowing it.
Doesn't it make it all the more sinister that he gives them money and then they kill him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's what Strangway does. He was always a generous man.
By the way, he is living my ideal life. Bridge in the afternoon with either like a tea or a cocktail, just sitting there talking in the breeze, the Jamaican breeze. How great would that, life be?
Yeah, that'd be nice. Were they all just on vacation? Or
they, no, they're all there. working.
Quote unquote.
Nobody had a Jamaican accent. I think people were trying, but they were not Jamaican accents.
Did Quarrel or Pussfeller?
No, it's terrible.
No.
His accent, I don't know what it was.
Yeah, that's true.
Quarrel. You have to say it like Sean Connery.
Oh, quarrel.
Fetch my shoes.
I thought, I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Fetch my shoes. I do like how Quarrel called him Captain.
I know.
And then Mr. James, and then Mr. Bond.
Molly and Roger Moore, your future sperm donors, your future child's father, in his first film, he goes back to Jamaica, and his guy sending him around is Quarrel Jr., Quarrel's son.
Quarrel.
Yeah.
I think it was a mistake to kill Quarrel.
Yeah.
I've said this before.
Oh, my God. Poor
I've said this before. He would have been a great, like, every time we're in the Caribbean, which happens very frequently in this film.
Yes, that's true.
Film franchise, rather. Yeah. Do you need headphone help, buddy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could have done that.
No, that's all right.
I didn't even sit back. I
just realized we're
better.
Real loud.
He wanted to do it discreetly, so he decided to get up.
Well, and then we had to talk about it.
you're the one that brought it up. Go ahead.
But back to first thoughts. I mean, if you want to know overall.
Absolutely.
You know, it's painful to watch such racist and misogynistic things.
Yeah.
But, you know, fun.
Well, a lot of that coalesced in one moment for me is when he pulled Honey Rider up by the arm and then told Quarrel, fetch my shoes. And it was just a whole lot. Like, he managed two of them.
When was that?
When they're on Crab Key.
Yeah, in that, like, river swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Which looks, by the way, great.
It does.
Looks like fun.
Yeah, what? Where? I don't understand what kind of a set that was.
That
was Jamaica?
That was outside, yeah.
You mean outside? Yeah, that was really Jamaica and the mangrove swamps.
Oh, we should go.
We should. All three of us.
Let's
None
do
of
it.
Our spouses or no. anything, just the
we,
three of us.
You know, Matt and I have discussed a casual stay at a GoldenEye, you know.
But isn't
talked about that a few years
like
ago.
It's super expensive,
it's
right?
It's super expensive.
Are there GoldenEye hotels? I don't understand.
Well, a GoldenEye is Ian Fleming's estate, his little small house that he used to write these novels at.
Oh.
And that's what the movie GoldenEye was named after, but...
Okay.
Though it had nothing to do with that.
But you can go to one of these places?
You can spend a week there if you'd like. Wow. I think it's $10,000 for the week, but if we're going with...
Is there just
but
one
if we're
or
going
multiple?
With... It sleeps 13.
Oh. Okay, so let's break that
you
down.
You start to break it up.
That's less than $1,000.
A night?
That's right.
Each?
Total.
That's not horrible. But then we got to be in that place with 13 people?
Well, and if we're going to go for all 13, I'm thinking we could just like do like four couples.
Yeah, eight people.
And you're whoever you decide.
Roger Moore.
Is your sperm
donor. She's bringing Roger Moore. That alone is worth it for me. I'm in. Are you kidding?
His golden typewriter's still there, Matt.
Oh, my God.
We can walk by it and
Where
type
is
on it?
It.
It's in Jamaica.
Oh, Jamaica. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Don't you think your listeners are going to hate me?
No.
No.
We like
some
all
might.
Kinds
some might.
Here.
Molly, I'm going to be honest.
She's like this annoying girl asking questions at the movie theater.
No, you're fine.
We've all.
I mean, I'm not worried. I don't care if they don't like me. I'm just saying.
Well, you are.
You made a big
it's possible
mistake
not
with
me. To like you. and frankly, we strive to give our listeners a variety of guests as best as possible, and I think we've been lacking in that lately. So we're happy to have you here.
Good.
And I think that like the people that are going to get annoyed by that. I'm happy to annoy them.
Exactly. And we annoy our listeners all the time.
All the time.
Oh, and good. Boy, they let us hear
all
about
the time.
Oh, they
too.
Do.
Oh, sure.
A lot of Reddit stuff.
I don't even want to know about it.
I don't either. No, they've sometimes come directly to you. But no, that being said, those are the vocal, far, far minority. Most all of the listeners are wonderful, supportive things. They will eat you up. They will love you. They will.
I just eat you up.
Your eventual sperm donor might be listening.
That's right.
You guys, if you're out there and you want to donate sperm, we've never met. This would be amazing. I'd really love to hear from you.
You should at the very least listen to her podcast, Spermcast, and then think, is this something I'm willing to go through with?
Yeah.
And
then, I mean, maybe, you know.
What if you meet your child's father from James Bonding?
Well, I can't call him father.
You can't?
I can't.
I don't understand the... I don't know
legally,
the ins and outs
if he's called father, then their rights are... like, any sperm donor contract is nullified.
Oh, I see.
If they're called... I didn't know
like
that.
So what do you call it? Baby
daddy? Knows
daddy?
The guy as his dad or father.
Oh, right. Oh. Right, right, right. Yeah.
Then in court, they can nullify.
So ideally, you're looking for a stranger anyway.
I don't have an ideal at this very moment.
This is good.
I'm exploring
it. This
it
can
all.
Go anywhere.
Wow. Okay.
And it will. Nice. where were we?
All right. Well, so we're past
we're at general
thoughts. It was fun to watch, but mm-hmm. I will say that I got a little sleepy at one point, had to get up and eat some pizza.
That sounds good too.
And then get another gin and tonic.
You're having gin and tonics too?
We were just talking
gins
about
and
that.
Tonic.
Last oh,
that's
gin
my favorite.
And tonic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the writing is weird, but hey, that's, I mean, that's
what do you mean by that?
Well, when, what's her face in the swamp?
Honey Rider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were breathing through the straw, and then he kills that random guy, and she's like, oh, and he's like, I had to, but he didn't have to. I don't know. It was just like, everything is just so, it's just, I don't know. What do you guys don't have anything to say about it? It seems normal, like people actually talk like this?
No. But I chalk it up to it being an action franchise, but also over 50 years old.
Yeah.
Where when I watch movies like this, there
is
a sort of dialogue like, listen up, you follow, and things are going to be different around here, see?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean just like Edward G. Robinson. There's like, I actually wrote a note too, where this is straight out of Fleming's dialogue. He says, Connery says, all frequencies changed immediately, security's broken. So immediately is used in replacement of as soon as. So all frequencies changed immediately, security's broken. And in the Fleming books, he always uses the word directly like that. All frequencies changed directly, security's broken. And I found that to be an interesting way to speak. That's like a bygone usage that we don't do anymore.
Yes, yeah. Very bygone.
I love that.
I don't
kind
even
of
understand
stuff.
What he's trying to say.
Let's say I want to say I'm going to come over to your house as soon as I get a lift. So I'm going to come over to your house immediately. I get a lift.
Yuck.
Or
you? I don't think you'd say I.
What's
I'm going to come over. You'd say I'm going to come over to your house immediately. Get a lift.
No, because
that be what you'd
no,
say?
That's like a no.
Then the other person will be coming to you getting a lift.
Oh well,
yeah.
This is no. You know what? Let's not do this in the '60s, guys. Let's not travel back in time and try to wait for a lift to go to each other's homes.
Yeah, it's probably just the language back then, but also shooting on film and not being able to. I don't know. Just
well, everything's ADR'd pretty much too, so that's why some of it sounds so stilted. And like we've talked about this before, but the guy with the bullhorn when they're shooting at him, he's yelling at him on the boat, you know, like, get off the island. He takes his bullhorn.
Come back with the dogs.
He takes his bullhorn down at some point. It just continues with the bullhorn sound effect. Like they didn't even bother.
All right, move along.
There were so many sound problems. Yeah. In the very beginning when they're playing cards, one of them was so quiet I couldn't hear them and everything else was so loud.
Yeah.
And then there was another part where Bond was having a conversation with somebody and they had a completely different sort of tone sound wise. Like there was almost an echo on this guy's voice.
And maybe some one person
was
ADR'd possibly or something.
Yeah.
It seems like they either the technology just wasn't there or they didn't care as much about sound. Maybe both. But
or in the theaters, it probably didn't play back that much.
Yeah, that's true.
It all sounded flat, maybe.
Yeah. But so does the mythos or like the cultural awareness that you have of James Bond, did it go in line with this film or did you kind of go like, this is not what I expected for an early James Bond film?
That's what I expected. I think I've definitely seen little chunks here and there on TV and just not really been attracted to it.
Yeah. Well, this is also one that is like It's very almost mellow and linear. It's one of the more simple Bonds, wouldn't you say?
This is a very warm blanket for me. This, as far as the Bond movies
you
go,
love it.
It's very comfortable.
Comforting.
Like it's so the pacing is like so like Let's do this scene where she gives him actual directions and we follow him while he's going to her house.
Entirely in real time too, which is interesting. Like there isn't a lot of passage of time.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, as we say, sometimes shoe leather.
Yeah.
Where you got to lose the shoe leather, where like you don't want to see someone walking from here to here to here to here. Uh-huh. You just want to go from here, cut, go to here. But in this movie, there is a lot of shoe leather.
And yeah,
I
you're
like
totally
it.
Right.
We've noted that's the only time you get the James Bond theme in this film is whenever he's walking from one place to another or driving or flying
yeah.
or something. Yeah. yeah. Huh. But we were talking earlier before you got here, Molly, about how both of us like this one a little more than last time because it's just a simple detective story. And that yeah. was refreshing because a lot of the Bonds later on become crazy complicated and just ridiculous. Oh. And the plot is almost second to arranging all the action set pieces and stuff. So it's like...
Yeah, it becomes truly convoluted the further yeah. you go down the line of James Bond movies. Well, maybe not even the further you go. It sort of gets really convoluted the second we go into Goldfinger.
Yeah, Goldfinger...
That's
right.
How far down the line is that?
The next
third.
Film. Oh, no, yeah, sorry.
It's the third one.
Yeah. Mm. And this one is pretty close to the book, too. So the books are relatively simple, and the movies get crazy.
Now, the later ones that I might have seen, are those crazy, too? Because mm-hmm. I don't remember. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
the Brosnan ones sure are. Some of the Craig ones are a little more. The plot can get complicated, but they're not, like, fantastical. Some of those...
His opinion about... Brosnan is coloring this right now. I'm sorry.
You telling me Brosnan Die Another Day isn't crazy?
Die Another Day is crazy, but Skyfall's the craziest.
But it's not crazy in terms of future fantasy science fiction.
Okay, yep.
You know what I mean?
I will give you that.
The plot's complicated and unbelievable, but Die Another Day has an invisible car and flipping cars and like not like cars get flipped, like the cars flip themselves.
With the use of an ejector seat
even
after the car is already on its roof, Matt.
Even
oh my
more
God.
Unbelievable, but I love that film.
How you don't.
I love it. It's a good one.
Oh, man, I had a question just now, and I told
you
Star Wars. Oh, what is the thing? I think it's maybe, is it the inside of a gun?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
It's, the gun barrel itself. So what's interesting, if you really break it down literally, is Bond shoots someone who then somehow manages to bleed inside his own gun.
That's a real gun barrel. Did you
it
know
is,
that?
Yeah,
it's
with
the
a pinhole
interior
camera.
Of a real gun
is
barrel.
It?
Yeah,
not real blood though.
So, what was the thing that you have a picture of in Switzerland?
That is on top of the Schilthorn Alp. They have a actual tube that's rifled out like a gun barrel, but it's maybe like 2 feet in diameter, a foot and a half,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of like. I don't know, 3 or 4 feet long. And so you can take a picture at one end and it looks like you're down a gun barrel.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. So it doesn't move. That was just in my mind. It was like moving kind of like a...
There's a...
Oh, it does move.
It has a like a reflection moving. And some of the later movies really CG that up and stuff. But in one of the Brosnan films, the bullet, a CG bullet goes down the gun barrel. Like it shoots a bullet straight at you.
Into the gun barrel, which...
Yeah.
would have caused some sort of hole in the gun that the blood could have gotten in.
I guess, but he's still holding that gun pretty steadily.
Yeah.
This is the first time I notice something new every time I watch one of these things. I have never placed it. I always knew Lois Maxwell, who plays Moneypenny, was mm-hmm. Canadian, although she lived in England.
Yep.
But she doesn't have a full-on English accent. I always just kind of let it slide as it's English, but it's not. She's a little... Americanized. Have you noticed?
You know, I haven't noticed just because in my brain, that's what Moneypenny sounds like.
Yeah.
And everyone in the movie's British as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Watch it again. I mean, she's definitely got that like transatlantic thing where there are some like British pronunciations, but it's not strong.
The idea that the, that MI6 or as M calls it, MI7, is bustling at 3 a.m. Like,
I know, huh?
He can get Major Boothroyd in there to give him a new gun.
Yeah, and Moneypenny's already there.
Yeah.
M's already there. They must have been called in for this.
And there's no, like, you know what I would have liked? A little bit, like, just a couple of mugs of coffee around.
Yeah.
Like a carafe.
You're right, yeah.
Full of coffee.
Yeah.
Would have just would have set the scene a little better for me.
Would have made it real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Molly, what did you think of the style and the art direction and like the look of this film?
Oh, I like the look.
Yeah, me too. That's one of my favorite things. Yeah.
Yeah, everything looked great. I mean, I love the clothes. Yeah. And yeah.
And then the like, what about like the set design? Like when that professor is given the tarantula that room with the kind of big ovular grid.
Oh yeah, that was cool. And the huge room where they had the last, the ending scene where there was the, where the water was boiling or whatever. That was a, I was just thinking about that set. How
isn't that
huge
amazing?
It must have been.
Yeah. And that is nothing compared to what they end up doing with the same production designer. Like that was just the beginning. Yeah.
That back to the tarantula thing though. Why?
Yeah. I know. Give him a gun, which wouldn't have worked anyway.
From a gun?
No, I was saying give him a gun rather than a tarantula.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, give him a gun. Yeah. But then also, like, how do you, I mean, so he puts a tarantula in the room and assumes that it's going to go to the bed. And, oh, my God, that long scene where he's just looking at the tarantula and just waiting for it to walk off. Is that?
I guess. What did you think of the music when he killed the tarantula?
I don't remember. Oh, yeah. Or whatever. It was like in time with his banging. Yes. That was cool. Noticed it.
Yeah. Did you like the music in general?
I did like the music. Yeah.
Me too.
Underneath the mango tree. It's the catchiest tune.
Yes.
I think we should bring it back. We'll do a remix.
We should do not only an episode on the unused theme songs, but an episode of the secondary music songs from Bond movies. So you've got like Three Blind Mice, Underneath the Mango Tree. There's that one from Tomorrow Never Dies, that slow jazz song. Do you know that one? Only Myself to Blame.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I actually like that song. There's like the Pretenders one. There's the K.D. Lang one. There's all these secondary songs that were only used in the movie or at the end credits.
At the closing credits, yeah.
Would you be allowed to play those songs in your thing?
We sure are.
Well, we might anyway. Who knows? Yeah.
I'm just
if
curious,
it's an academic discussion, you can.
Buckle up, everybody. By the end of the year, there are going to be 700,000 podcasts available on Apple Podcasts.
Well, and they're never going to catch us.
That actually seems low to me for some
That's
reason.
How many podcasts there are.
700,000 James Bond podcasts?
There might be, I think that's 650,000 Game of Thrones recap podcasts.
Yep.
23,000 Westworld recaps.
And all of these are three guys sitting around, right?
There are three white guys.
Yeah.
Occasionally joined by a funny friend.
Yeah.
You know.
You're doing us a favor here, Molly.
They live probably in the greater Los Angeles area.
Right. Right.
And they all have opinions on the Valley.
So let's talk about this Bond, James Bond scene where you're first introduced to James Bond.
I was shocked at how handsome he was. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's Sean Connery. I forgot.
Because you still think of him as like beard and bald. Is that like your
era? Handsome guy. Well, back in the 90s, what was he in? Like,
Entrapment.
Entrapment and The Rock.
The Rock
was such a great movie.
Untouchables, that was the 80s. But like,
I did see that. Yeah, I think of him as white hair, white beard.
Yeah.
No hair? You said he has no hair.
He doesn't, but he often has really good wigs. Or like Hunt for Red October, he has a wig too.
Yeah, just think of him as an older guy. So when I saw him, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. And yeah, he was very sexy.
He's just very manly or
something.
Very
manly.
Can you believe he's 32 in this movie?
No.
It's too tan to be 32.
Well, that smoking and drinking, like he looks 42 probably.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks good. He looks great.
Yeah.
He's got some good face wrinklage going on.
Yeah.
You know? Like a furrowed brow.
Yeah.
He's got some laugh lines.
Yeah.
Which is odd for a man who doesn't laugh.
he does have very deep laugh lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his mouth.
What
skin
are laugh
on his
lines
face,
exactly? These?
Just these big guys.
Oh, yeah.
The skin on his face looks very rubbery.
It does look a bit like a mask.
Yeah.
Or
like
it looks
Jim
thick,
Carrey,
right?
Or
oh yeah, or like yeah, it, like it can stretch
you
a long
way. You could stretch it really far if you wanted to.
He's got more skin than infrastructure,
but still very handsome.
He's listening, so we got to tread lightly.
No, but I mean, I do mean that he's very handsome.
He is very handsome, and when he says Bond, James Bond, do you get it all as much
get
of
tingles?
A shiver and a tingle that we get when he does that?
It was pretty exciting. I don't know if I felt any tingles.
You didn't, even when that music kicked in.
No, I'm getting it now.
Oh,
well,
no,
listen,
gross,
it,
gross, gross.
It hit us all in the right spot.
Also, the way he just lights that cigarette, he's at a casino club at 2 a.m. in London. What day of the week do you think this is?
Oh, guaranteed Wednesday.
It's not even
this
a weekend.
This is a guaranteed
this
Wednesday.
This is like, yeah,
oh, I don't think.
What did he do that day?
For even a second.
Good question.
What does he do on a day off?
I think he has days off. I think he goes in.
I think you're looking
I think
at
he
it.
Goes
he's
in.
He's killing all day long?
He has an office, so. Right? He has an office at MI6. Yeah. I think he pops over to that. He puts things in the drawer that he can later, when he's falsely retiring, he'll
have mementos. He harasses Moneypenny.
He does. Like, I mean, we've established that James Bond is a man who saves mementos.
Why does he need it so bad, the sex? He's like, he needs it from every woman he sees.
That's interesting you see it that way, because I think historically it's always been, it's not that he needs it, it's that it's always coming at him. But
No,
I'm not saying that, but you don't think...
No, I've never thought that.
It's presented, they're always throwing themselves at his feet.
I disagree. I think that he's always throwing himself into the situation.
Yeah,
that
I thought
he's always crafting it.
Well, but it's written as a sort of like, there's no woman is ever going to say no to him.
You know, what's interesting is, like, for the first time, again, this is another thing I've noticed for the first time watching Dr. No now, for God knows, this is like, might be my 25th viewing of this movie. but even Jack Lord is like, this guy cannot stop fucking everything.
Which guy's that?
He's Felix Leiter.
The CIA guy with the
fancy sunglasses, the lady sunglasses.
What part of the movie is he in?
Earlier.
He's in a lot of it.
He's in a lot of it, but he's the one that tracks him down at the airport, and he's got the
that guy. Gotcha,
cat glasses.
Gotcha.
Hawaii Five-0.
What do you think of those glasses?
I don't remember them. I just remember him being looking like a creepo.
I don't know how you don't remember those glasses.
Sorry.
They're the most memorable thing about the movie. Just how ridiculous those glasses look.
I remember
you
the first moment
away.
I saw the guy looking down from above.
Right.
That's when I first saw him.
Yeah. So I'm going to open this up just to show
Molly,
the guy we're talking about here, this Jack Lord character. Now, Jack Lord, do you remember the old 60s television show Hawaii Five-0?
Yeah, I don't think I'm sure I've seen it, but...
Well, this is... Now, of course, Hawaii Five-0 is back on CBS. Very popular. They shoot it, guess what, in Hawaii. Oh my God, is he not? He might not have made the cut of this book somehow. That's insanity.
Blasphemy.
This is craziness. But Jack Lord, it was so nice to see him in this movie. When did he die? When did Jack Lord die? Was it after we watched the movie?
Probably because we watched the movie.
I don't remember.
Oh, that's just her. That's just Honey Rider in a publicity photo.
Was this movie colored later?
No. It's just shot in that kind of...
That blood was the least real blood I've ever seen.
That's in those days they used to use like red paint basically.
Not even animal
now,
blood.
Now did they have to do that because of the studio code? Or
to make it more like hyper realistic or something?
Yeah,
maybe. Or I mean not
you mean
hyper
in order to not make the audience too upset?
Yeah.
Yeah, like a
I'm wondering.
Maybe, I don't know. Or maybe that's just like they needed it to pop more or something? I don't know.
Well, you know, when you're going to see a film in Technicolor,
you just
want to be blown away by every color.
That's right.
I have a question.
Yes, Molly.
It might be really dumb.
There are no dumb questions.
True.
Yeah, there are. Come on.
Well, let's see.
excuse me. Ian Fleming wrote all these?
That's the dumbest question I've
ever
had.
Oh, my God. And then you said Ian Fleming was in this too?
No, he's not in it.
Oh, okay.
No, he did. He wrote the books. He didn't write the movies.
Oh, because when you were like quoting him earlier, I thought he was the character that you had.
Oh no, Bond says that, but Fleming would write lines like that in his book. Fleming died 2 years after this.
He just wrote the one.
He wrote all the books, but none of the movies.
I didn't realize there were books.
He did write.
I get it now. I get
he
it.
He did
it's
write the.
Up there.
He
I
did.
See them.
He did write the screenplay to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh, I remember that movie.
He wrote
good stuff.
Did he write the screenplay or was there a book?
Didn't he write the screenplay to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? Roald Dahl wrote the book, and he wrote the screenplay, and they switched it.
That's right.
Because then Roald Dahl wrote the script to You Only Live Twice. Roald Dahl wrote a James Bond movie.
Wow.
This is my favorite line Wonka. In this movie, and it comes from Quarrel, and he says, "Puss feller wrestled alligators." Those three words put together.
No use in struggling.
Puss feller wrestled alligators.
What was that in reference to?
There's the guy who owns that club, the bar, like Jamaican club. His name is Puss feller. I'm trying to remember, in the book, there's a reason he's called that. Like, I think because he killed an octopus in a struggle underwater or something like that. I forget.
Right.
Puss feller. That's how he got that name.
Oh. Okay. Oh, I get it now. Octopus.
Yes. What did you think of Ursula Andress as the very first Bond girl? Well, I guess technically Sylvia Trench, and we can call them Bond women.
Which one are you talking about?
She's Honeychild Ryder. Honey Ryder.
Honeychild.
Well, that's her name in the book.
Oh, right.
Honeychild. Yeah, she was great. Very athletic. Did she do all her own stunts?
It looked like it. Like when they hopped down into the boat at the end.
Yeah, I thought that was her.
That was both of them, I think.
Yeah, she was a really fast runner.
Yeah.
And, you know, she really came alive when she had to be physically active. But
she's dubbed too. It's not her real voice.
It's not.
No, she had a heavy accent.
Because I could not understand where her accent was
supposed
to be
from. You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, Ursula Andress is quoted right here as saying, "They were lucky to have chose me because I was sporty. Otherwise, if I had been a normal, delicate person, I think I wouldn't have survived what they made me do."
It does seem like they're like stunt work wasn't as much a thing back then. The actors were expected to just kind of do it, you know?
Yeah.
Do the different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was cool.
Yeah.
What was she doing out there? Just collecting conch shells?
She sells them.
Singing that song?
Yeah. She's out there collecting shells and singing a song. Underneath the mango tree, me honey and me. She sells the shells in Miami.
She sells seashells in Miami.
$50.
$50.
$50.
How does she get to Miami? Did she take a little... We never saw her boat, did we?
I don't think we did. Yeah. Or
and
did
she
we?
She just sneaks
hidden.
Onto that island. Nobody bothers her. But Bond comes along and ruins her game.
That's right. And her dad was killed on that island.
Oh, I don't remember that part. Yes, yes.
What did you think of the villain, Dr. No?
Oh, it's, he was all right.
It's the longest we ever go without seeing the villain, right? It has to be.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
We don't see him until the last 30 minutes of the movie.
Like Silva's a distant runner-up.
Yeah, but we see him 30 minutes into the movie.
No, not even, not 30.
40?
Maybe, 50. Yeah. He's 50. Yeah, Matt's winking at me. I gotta go.
I can't keep guessing. This is an interesting quote from Ian Fleming regarding the depiction of the Secret Service.
Yes.
Secret Service should be presented as a tough, modern organization in which men may dress more casually than they do in the FBI. Above all, they should not slap each other on the back or call each other old boy.
Meaning... that's too casual or that's not casual enough?
I think that's FBI-y. Oh. Chap and old boy.
I had another Ian Fleming question.
Yeah.
Please.
Isn't Ian Fleming the name of an old English actor, too?
No.
Who's
You're thinking
the guy?
Of Ian McKellen.
Yeah, I loved him. He's dead now.
No, he's
still with us.
Well, great. Now you just did it.
All right, guys. Time to watch Lord of the Rings.
He's not dead. Who's the one that died from Harry Potter?
Alan Richard
Rickman?
Harris?
Oh.
Oh, Alan Rickman, too.
No, there was an old man.
Richard Harris that played Dumbledore?
Yeah, that's not Ian Fleming.
No.
No, it's not. It's not Ian McKellen. McKellen. McKellen.
Would you think Ian McKellen... Yeah, is it Ian McKellen?
McKellen.
McKellen. Do you think he'd make a good Bond villain?
Sure.
He'd make an interesting M, too.
He'd make a good everybody.
Yeah.
He's Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'm really confused about the Ians.
Well, you know, just take them with a grain of salt. What?
I don't know.
I want to get back to... I mean, I'm going to take control of your podcast for a second.
We'd love it.
No, that... back to Bond being so pushy with the women.
Yeah.
You didn't think that he was acting super hungry and, like, pushing himself on women that didn't want him, but, like...
I've misspoken. I absolutely think that. I'm just saying that I 100% am with you on that. I'm thinking that the writers at the time don't see it that way. They see it as like, it's a man's right to do this and women are just going to be fine with it. So it gives Bond this mystique that he almost is like immune to anything and that everything comes his way in every way. Like intrigue, yeah. Espionage. Like,
the woman that was the secretary whose house he went to, what was her name? Do you remember? Where she told him to drive to her house.
Oh, Miss Tarot. Yeah.
She really didn't want him when he opened that door and he's...
Well, he was supposed to have been dead by then.
Yeah, she was...
No. I mean, when he comes to the door and she's listening, she's on her knees and she's listening at the door at the office, she had zero attraction for him. And yet he was, you know, immediately coming on to her.
But there is the argument to be made that he was coming on to her because he knew that she was listening.
And she's working for the villain.
Yeah.
Right.
But I see the thing is...
So he was doing it on purpose. He wasn't just super hungry for the
But I'm sure he was, too. I don't mean to say that I don't think Bond isn't a predator and isn't super hungry.
No, I think it's clear. It's exactly what you're saying, Matt. No. It's clear as day.
But they write the women to fawn all over him so breezily that it's almost like they're making it seem... Like, they're almost, like, removing responsibility from Bond in a way, you know? Like, giving him... such magical powers of persuasion and attraction that it's almost like he, you know, again, I'm not condoning this. I feel like this is kind of what the writers and the like culture of the time was. Yeah. It's like, if you're a dashing man, it's almost your eminent domain to go do these things.
Yeah. But I think they show it both ways in this movie. I think that, like with Sylvia, when she shows up at his house and has taken off all her clothes and is now wearing his dress shirt,
that's true.
I think that is a clear indication that Sylvia, he wants to go to get on the plane to go to Jamaica.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I guess I can stay. That's an instance of being thrown at.
That's true. And I guess I'm thinking about what happens long term with Bond.
I think, if we're taking the isolation of this movie in particular. So then we then jump over to it's next. Next would be Tarot, right? Mm-hmm. So
next would be Moneypenny. Or Moneypenny was first, but that, okay.
The Moneypenny interplay is a long running, I don't even know, call it a gag.
She's into
it. She loves him.
Right.
He loves to flirt with her.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's very flirty, their relationship. But
Okay, moving on, Tarot.
Tarot, that's him in full, I'm James Bond, I'm going to spy mode. Mind you. Okay, so that's the instance of like, why don't we meet for dinner? Blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he shows up and she's not ready, she's, oh my God, you should have been dead. Why are you still here? Then we see him go into predator mode, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that's when we see James Bond in full, like, I might as well have sex with her because I've got to kill a lot of time.
Yeah. And this is what I mean by then she's just very quickly like, okay. You know?
Yeah, she does not want
it. That's what I mean.
She had to do it for her job.
Yeah.
Right, but they write these women very simplistically in this sense.
Going on behind my back.
Yeah, okay, well.
Yeah.
All right.
What about that towel that was basically glued onto her body?
It was zipped.
It was zipped.
Yeah.
I know, I love that.
Like, is that a thing that women back there used to wear?
They have those even now. I don't know about zip, but Velcro versions that are just like...
Yes, but they're not form-fitting like that. Hers had like a whole bodice and like...
I'd wear one of those.
Stiff chest area.
I'd wear
with the
one
pointy
of those right
60s
now.
60s boobs.
Yeah.
Right. 60s boobs. They're a thing.
And then she said, I'll hold him off for a couple hours, but then it was immediately night and it seemed like so many hours later.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Oh, and how about when he was driving and they had the car behind him? That was interesting how they had to work around that cinematography where like they had his car. And then it was the movie of a car behind them, but he had to do all the jerking back and forth. Like he was getting hit, but it didn't. The car wasn't jerking. He actually didn't jerk much. He just turned the wheel, but it was real bad. That car behind him was so huge too.
Yeah, this is a baseline Bond film where you get the simplest. It's like the most down the middle because it's the beginning. And so the Bonds tend to deviate from here where they go like in the extreme one way or the other. They get really realistic and gritty or like really fantastical. And I like bits of both. But this one has always been one that has been slightly boring to me because as a kid, I never started with this. You never know which one was first as a kid. You're just kind of randomly choosing. So when you eventually happen upon this one, you're like, oh, this one's kind of boring compared to the others. But now watching it like this morning and stuff, I was like you, Matt, just kind of happy to just slowly go along the ride. It was perfect as a morning watch, you know, because it's also kind of, it's one of the most colorful and bright of all the Bond movies too.
I agree.
And like kind of summery, and summer's coming around these parts and, you know.
You just brought a weird memory back into my brain.
What's that?
Of being a kid and looking at the back of the VHSs to see the year that the movie came out to try to figure out which ones came first.
Yeah.
Because there was no, like, you couldn't go on the internet and look up the release dates of all the James Bond movies. You'd literally have to flip the VHS over, look at the very bottom corner and see 1968.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which one's earlier?
You knew by what Bond actor, at least what era you were in.
Yeah.
But
so when did you guys start getting obsessed with James Bond movies?
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. We figured we've been doing the podcast so long, we should actually like it.
Yeah.
So a couple weeks ago, we decided, deep dive, we're going
to
get into it.
Yeah, we were hired to do this. We've never seen a Bond episode.
We were hired by Sean Connery to talk about how handsome he is.
Both of us was with, I think, our fathers. Yeah. And like mine, so much so that I don't remember a time before it, like because this movie franchise existed well before me. So it was just either on TV or we were getting VHSs. So I don't even remember Bond not being something that was I was aware of or watching or something. But I watched it with my dad a lot.
Yeah, and I had always just, like, my sisters were really into it.
Really?
They were older. They still are much older than me.
We gotta have them on.
Good luck. And my sister Julie lives in England now. Oh, wow. She was such an Anglophile as a kid anyway.
Wow.
And she married a British guy. So, but yeah, just as a kid, they would be into, like, Remington Steele, Pierce Brosnan, Timothy Dalton stuff, right? And then for me, it really galvanized, and I would go see them in the movie theater when they came out, and then it really galvanized for me when I started working at Blockbuster as a teenager and was able to just grab whatever movie I felt like grabbing.
That's got to be good.
That's fun. That's I miss Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Me too.
I've got a gloft.
Oh, let's look out for this.
Okay. So Gorley's look out for this. When they go to sit down for this very cordial and polite and urbane dinner between Dr. No and Bond and Honey Rider, there's a point where they pan out or they zoom out on Dr. No, and all he's got on his bare plate are two very large black olives just spaced. They look exactly like they should be his testicles or something, just kind of the placement, and it's worth watching. It was a weird, like, was that on purpose? Why does he have two? And they're large. They're like the size of like dates or figs or something. Well, not figs, but yeah, maybe dates. And it's just weird that they're just placed like that.
You think that was an amuse-bouche or do you think that that was his meal?
No garnish, nothing.
What was on everyone else's plate?
Food, I think, as far as I could tell. Maybe that's because that's maybe all he could handle with his hands.
Yes.
But there's nothing else and they're like an inch or 2 inches apart, and they're just, it's just strange.
That is strange.
Yeah.
Now, this is weird. I don't actually remember them eating dinner. I must have had
I don't know if they ever got to dinner, but they have drinks where they're in his lair at the end with the fish. Remember the big?
I remember the big fish, yes.
Yeah. And they go up to the table and they talk about
$1 million. What?
Dr. No wants him to join him in Spectre.
Yes, that's familiar. But quick question.
Yeah.
Did she say something about, or was there some implication that they were 200 feet underneath? Okay.
Yeah.
Because of why? Something that only lives 200 feet down?
Yeah, she saw something that only lives...
Some plant.
A sea turtle or a plant. Yeah.
Okay. Something. And then the fish aren't really that big. It's just condensed.
They're magnified by the
thick glass.
Okay.
$1 million.
I designed it myself.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's not from Austin Powers, huh?
It no, might as well
nothing
be.
From Austin Powers is from Austin Powers.
If you watch You Only Live Twice, that is the most Austin Powersy movie you will see. They're almost identical in a way, just in production design and.
Which one?
You Only Live Twice.
Okay.
Yeah, not gonna make you watch it, but
I'm probably not gonna watch it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Safe assumption.
So then let's see. So Bond thwarts Dr. No's plan to disturb the U.S. rockets.
What was he gonna do?
He wanted to stop the U.S. rockets.
Just stop them.
Yeah.
Where were the rockets going?
For money.
They were shooting from Cape Canaveral, Florida. Yeah, for money.
To where?
I think they were testing a moon rocket.
A moon rocket.
Moon rocket.
Yeah, so this is 62. So this is like right in the era of the Mercury missions, which were the single person capsules.
Oh,
so
okay.
your John Glenn's of the mm-hmm. John Glenn, the first American to orbit the Earth or in space. Yes,
It's interesting because this is very similar to the movie plot of Moonraker, where the villain is like thwarting rocket launches.
What's but Moonraker is him wanting to.
No, I meant the book plot.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, yeah, of course, they're way different, but...
Wait, is that another Bond movie or something else?
It's another Bond movie.
Yeah, and okay. book. Yeah. Someone sent me a link that what Moonraker actually is. It's a type of bandit. It's worth looking up because it has a really cool story behind it. Now I can't remember it. You guys talk and all.
Is it like a gardener who would only rake by the moon?
No,
the light of the moon? Like, yeah, on a full moon, he'd be out there raking.
No,
he'd be the Moonraker.
Hold on.
That's the Moonraker. Why is he out there?
Don't
mind him. That's just our Moonraker.
He likes to work at night. He's just got really light skin.
It's better.
Smugglers, and they. Okay, this is good. This name refers to a folk story set in the time when smuggling was a significant industry in rural England, with Wiltshire lying on the smuggler's secret routes between the south coast and customers in the center of the country. The story goes that some local people had hidden contraband barrels of French brandy from customs officers in a village pond. While trying to retrieve it at night, they were caught by the revenue men, but explained themselves by pointing to the moon's reflection and saying they were trying to rake in a round cheese. The revenue men, thinking they were simple yokels, laughed at them and went on their way. But as the story goes, it was the Moonrakers who had the last laugh. In the words of Wiltshire shepherd William Little, who recounted the story to writer John Yonge Ackerman, Zo the exciseman as asked the question, and his grin at him, but they good laugh when they got him the hoy me the stuff. Fuck that, I don't know what that meant. But anyway, Moonrakers, you're raking cheese in water.
English accent.
Yeah. That's just been a little...
This story I don't buy.
Folklore etymology diversion brought to you by Matt Gourley. Well, it's been a while, but comedian Michael Ian Black is finally back here on Earwolf, this time with a new podcast called Obscure. In Obscure, Michael tackles a great work of literature he's never read, and you probably haven't either. He's reading one of the most well-respected books ever written, Jude the Obscure, out loud and commenting as he goes, even though he didn't really want to. This book has been on his bookshelf for years, just mocking him. But he's reading it for you, and he has a lot of thoughts to share along the way. Join Michael Ian Black, some of his famous and non-famous friends, and experts as he discovers Jude's world and a few things about his own. Is that a terrible idea? Probably is. But it's a terrible idea he wants to do with you. Subscribe to Obscure now in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I think there's like so many great things that are established in this film, like his drink of choice, his vodka martini.
Oh, yeah.
Mixed like you said, sir, not stirred.
That's right.
I think that's a fun little tidbit for the film. I love the mention of the tailor. I love when Jack Lord asks him about his suit, where his suits get tailored.
Do you like his suit pants, that style? I don't like that style.
I, with the pleats. For the first time, did. I was like, those high-waisted pleats.
No, Matt, don't start wearing those.
Well, I'm not going to because I...
Well, if anyone can pull it off, it's you, buddy.
No.
You got the figure.
I'm certainly not going to, but there was something about it. Where, you know why I liked it? Because I'm like, I don't see that around anymore.
Oh, God.
And that fast...
I saw a guy with a high-waisted pleated pant the other day at a restaurant, and he had a black turtleneck on,
okay,
and a gym bag.
Oh,
and he looked French. And I said to Dory, "I was like, there is no way this guy is not part of a bank robbery."
I love it. Turtlenecks have really been calling my name lately,
yeah,
and I find as I get older, the less I give a damn about what I look like and what people would care. So. part of me does want to get those high-waisted pleats.
Do it.
And wear a scarf around my neck and a turtleneck.
Amanda just be was you. Saying the other day in my podcast that she likes, oh no, it was in the big ones, that she likes short scarves on a man.
That's what I like too, and I wore one in Switzerland.
Define short scarves.
Like you wear like a button-up shirt, right?
Yeah.
And then you kind of leave it maybe one or two buttons open, okay. And then you have like basically a bandana-sized scarf that you tie around your neck, and it just has a short knot in the front of your neck. And I love that look. It's more for like gardening, right? So I'm thinking like I'm in Switzerland. I'm not in the States. You can pull this off here. I pull it off, and people are looking at me like, I don't know what you think we do here, but this is not
it.
No, they weren't. But I'm slowly gonna get that back into society.
Just like well, what like I would assume. Well, it,
yeah,
but backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, for me, it seems like you're out tending to the vines.
Yes, it's a very vineyardy thing. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Oh, and that's what I feel like today. Amanda and I are gonna do some work in the yard and build a garden bed, and I think maybe it's time to bring the scarf out. You know?
That was the idea that the turtleneck. It won't burn the back of your neck. Is that what it is?
I think the idea is, look at me. I'm definitely French.
Right. Well, you are wearing the shirt for it today.
I know.
You're wearing the quintessential French shirt.
Or like a gondolier's shirt.
Yeah. The martini, the suit thing, I enjoy the armory scene. I love Major Boothroyd.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the armory thing?
That's when he gets his gun.
Oh, gotcha. But then didn't he? He said leave the gun, but then he walked out with the gun, but then he left it with Moneypenny, right?
He left Moneypenny in an empty box.
Yeah.
He had the gun.
Yeah, that's weird that he leaves her the empty box, and it fades out on her opening it and kind of going, oh.
Yeah.
Nothing in here. He could have left me a gun or a ring.
I love the way the guy playing Major Boothroyd delivers the line. For a lady's handbag.
Yeah.
Like, well, just M, like with M enough like sauce on it to be like, I gotcha.
M sets him up to say like, I want hard reasons why he shouldn't be using this gun. And he's just Mr. British and polite, but then gets in this passive aggressive thing with a lady's handbag.
Why does he want that other gun so badly?
I think it's just his sports car. Like he knows it and loves it.
Does he continue to use that gun throughout the rest of the...
The new one.
The PPK.
Even to this day, they went away from it for a few years, but now he's back to using that old, not the one he originally has.
Okay.
But this one that they give him, this Walther PPK, which is actually like a German gun from World War II.
Oh.
But he still uses it even now.
Wow.
What a guy.
Wow. Yeah.
True to his traditions.
Yeah.
He's actually being handed a Walther PP in this movie. It's not a PPK.
Oh.
My God, right? Things you learn from Amazon's X-ray vision.
That makes sense. When they put the silencer on, I'm always like, that's not a Walther PPK. I'm
quick
sure
question,
you thought the
quick
same
question.
Thing. Yeah?
So is every woman that he has sex with in a movie considered a Bond girl? Or is it just... I don't know.
We went over this question. There's no hard answer on this, but we essentially came down on the side of any girl that factors into the plot in some way. So like one of the hotel workers that kind of looks him up and down wouldn't be a Bond girl.
Uh-huh.
But Miss Tarot would, Honeychild, Sylvia Trench, they factor in some way. They don't have to sleep with him. That's usually what happens, but they are somehow involved in the intrigue or plot of it all.
Okay, so it's not like they have to be a villain or they have to be a good person.
Yeah, it could be either.
Okay.
They can be a victim, they can be a
hero. Doesn't matter if they get pregnant. Does he impregnate anyone ever?
No.
No.
Oh, he doesn't have a...
He might have dumb sperm. Yeah. We don't know.
You know what? Maybe I can't use a Bond sperm.
Although Roger Moore himself has.
Oh, good.
How many of them have... Do they all have kids?
I don't know.
I don't know about Dalton. All of them I know, but Dalton Connery's got kids, right?
I don't know.
I think so. Moore does.
More the merrier.
Up their sons.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah.
Can you imagine if you had that bloodline in there?
You would be so excited.
I would. I'd be like, Amanda, let's have a kid, but my sperm's broken. But I got this. I got Ricky Moore over here.
Ricky, little Ricky.
Ricky Moore.
I'd rather have Desi Arnaz's.
Oh, yeah? Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he around? No.
No, he died in
the
80s, I think.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Jeez.
A little of that Cuban heat.
I'd love to have some Lucy's sperm. She's I continually fall in love with her.
She's the
every
best.
Time I see that show for yeah. every reason.
Well, we'll see if we can get you some of her sperm.
Okay, please.
No, I haven't watched that show in a really long time.
I've been watching it a lot lately.
Is there any stuff that you cringe about?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
There's a lot of jokes about domestic violence.
Okay.
Like he'll.
How about racial stuff?
Only you know what they. I actually read about this too. There's some like when they go to Italy and the Italians are like, "She's a her birthday too," you know, like that kind of thing, but. they made a basic rule, and that was no one makes fun of Desi Arnaz, not as an ego thing, because they just didn't want to go to racial humor. The only one they would allow to do it was Lucy, because they thought she's married to him and she can call him out because he's, you know, they have a heated relationship sometimes. So no one makes fun of Desi's accent except Lucy, and that was how they handled it. That was their formula.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I can handle the misogyny. When it comes, when it's on that show.
Really? Yeah, because why?
It's just fun.
Like, it's just fun.
No, I mean, I grew up watching all those shows.
It's kind of like how we grew up with Bond. Like, that's the other thing I like about doing this podcast is that it's easy for those things to just get grandfathered in and you don't really think about them, the years that you're growing up and watching them. But when we watch these and I'm thinking like, oh, Molly's going to see this for the first time. I have to watch it through those eyes, and that stuff, it pops out anyway.
Wow,
but
yeah.
But it brings the good and the bad to the top, you know, and it's all worth talking about.
Yeah.
I do. Oh, the other thing that I noticed this time, and we can wrap up, is how loud the electric vent is.
Oh yeah,
because I'm just like, that was like right when I was like. Okay.
And then probably did that on purpose to wake everybody up.
The vent that he climbs through?
Yeah.
Why is it hot?
I think is it like a cooling vent for the nuclear reactor?
Yeah, it's like where the nuclear waste goes out.
Although that's weird because it goes from his cell straight to his room. So I think it's, I don't know what.
Well, only when he gets down to the bottom.
And then the water went through it.
Yeah.
Cooling water, I guess.
Oh, to cool the vents.
I guess.
Okay. To cool the...
Something like that.
Reactor?
I don't know, friends.
If you know how to build a nuclear power facility, let us know.
There was a lot of loudness.
Yeah.
Molly, did you say you had something else?
Oh, just that dragon. Why would anyone believe that there was a dragon on that island?
Well, that's another thing that contributes to the racism. That they even say like the natives think it's... And it's so like condescending to think that just...
But even Honey... What's her face?
Yeah.
Well, she's a native dragon. Too.
She is, and in the book,
she's from all over.
She lives in the basement of a burned-down house by herself, except she had her maid. So she actually spoke in a Jamaican accent in the book because she was raised by her maid.
Interesting.
It's a weird story. I forget.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what her accent was the whole time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't her anyway.
No, sure wasn't.
Yeah, that was the only other... I did actually take notes last night, but I forgot and I left them at home.
That's all right.
Some good ones.
Yeah. And then Quarrel's burned alive by the dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did... This is also the first time I noticed that Bond goes to approach the body.
Oh.
Like a little sadness.
Quarrel could have gotten away from that if he'd tried. That thing wasn't kind of at him too fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
They all could. They ran toward it, didn't they?
Kind of.
<yeah. laughs> It's also like, was that thing built just... Here's what I wonder. Was the legend of the dragon, did that predate Dr. No finding that island and then building that fake dragon to make sure people stay off?
Maybe that's...
Or did Dr. No build that dragon and then it started the dragon rumor?
I think that's what it was.
Yeah. I gotta see in the book what that is. I forget if that's in there.
Well, I'd give the dragon car... 007.
Oh, I give it a 000.
I give it GoldenEye +3. All right. So let's rate this film 0 to 007.
And for me, you know, I'm not doing it in respect to other movies.
What would you like to? Would you like to judge it on its own merits against all other films?
Or would you like
against the Bonds you've already seen?
Or would you like to judge it as what you think a James Bond movie is?
Yeah.
And how close it came to that.
Oh, it seems like 007 James Bond movie.
Well, okay. But do you think it's like...
That reminds me, I was watching the You know the Will Ferrell and Molly Shannon commentary of the royal wedding? They did it for the Rose
Parade.
Yeah,
I didn't see any of it.
It was really funny, but they start talking about James Bond, and they're in those characters, and Will Ferrell's like, ha, 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 God, I love those James Bond films. What's your favorite James Bond film? And she goes, oh, I think 007. That one is great. But just the way that she fired back with that so quickly. Oh, God, it was funny.
Well, until last night, I didn't know the movies weren't called James Bond or this or that.
Oh, like Indiana Jones?
Like I went
Jones?
To look it up on iTunes. Oh, and yeah. I wrote Dr. No, but I was like, I don't know if this is the same. Is this a James Bond? I don't.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't know.
Wow. Well, it's good that we
there
have.
There was no 007 or James Bond in the title.
You're a newcomer to the franchise. And I mean, we really should at some point have you back for like what is now a modern kind of solid James Bond film just to see the difference in where it's come, mm-hmm. but we won't.
And what are your favorites?
Casino Royale.
We go both ways.
Casino
Royale. We like
the
wacky.
I saw that one.
And we like the not wacky.
Yeah.
Like we like A View to a Kill, which is from the mid 80s and it's bananas.
Yeah.
Oh.
Roger Moore's last. He's 57.
Ooh. Yeah. Now I'm curious. I kind of do want to watch more.
That one's got Grace Jones in it. She's this like tough henchman named Mayday. Yeah. Christopher Walken's the villain.
That sounds familiar.
It's bonkers, but it's fun.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe judge it on what you think a Bond film should be. Like
should be?
Or
I mean, it is what I expected.
Okay.
Exactly what I expected. That's why I said 007.
Oh, so you did give it a 007.
For what I think a James Bond movie is. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't even thought about this, Matt. Go ahead.
I'm going to give it a
006.
I really enjoy this film.
I'm going to go 005.
Okay.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7.
That's right.
Average is me. I win.
Yeah.
But what about, I mean, for enjoyment purposes? Were you doing it?
This is for enjoy. This is like we sort of like, I don't know what our criteria is, really.
For my viewing experience for this movie, I'm going to go 004.
Well, that's
that might be more
decent.
Accurate then. Yeah.
That's still better than middle, down the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't
so
that
maybe
exactly
we could
middle?
Average yours and you're a 005.5?
No.
No?
I mean, you can't average me.
I can't. Oh, sorry. How dare I presume to average you?
Please don't.
004. Okay, yeah, no, I think that should be your rating, actually. I think the 004, how much you enjoyed watching the movie, right?
So then it's a 005 by average, which
is
me.
Then you win.
Woo!
Way to go, man.
Thank you. Next, two weeks from now, because you know we've only got two films left, we're doing something special. First of all, we're bringing back episode guest favorites, Maria and Amanda.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to watch Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace back to back and then record the episodes as back to back episodes because, as we've talked about many times on this podcast, Quantum of Solace is best when viewed as closely as possible to Casino Royale.
Now, yes, but now we don't know what that does to the quality level of Casino Royale.
I
never know. It could drop it.
Yeah.
Which one's first?
Casino Royale. And Quantum is a direct sequel, which has really never quite been done before in the franchise. So.
Okay,
picks up the second the movie ends.
But it has a troubled past. I've been looking forward to watching this movie probably the most.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it.
We've been weirdly saving it.
Yeah. Now also, I am forcing us to get to one of these off-brand Bond movies for the in-between episode. And Matt and I talked about it. We think between listener feedback on what the most requested one is and some that we came up with, we're going to do 4 non-Bonds. And I'm going to put up a poll on the James Bonding Twitter, and you can vote. Do you want us to watch and talk about Austin Powers, the first one? Thomas Crown Affair, Brosnan. Operation Kid Brother, also called O.K. Connery.
Yes.
It has an alternate
title. Yeah, it depends on what.
And Our Man Flint with James Coburn.
In Like Flint?
In Like Flint,
is the first one,
right?
Right,
you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So In Like Flint, Thomas Crown Affair, Austin Powers, and Operation Kid Brother. Which one do you want us to watch and talk about? And we'll do that for the episode next week.
So we're going to run a poll on...
You can do it now. Just look. We'll do it now.
We should keep it open until Saturday. No, we should, because we have to watch it.
When does this come out?
next Tuesday.
So if you're getting...
maybe
if,
keep it open until Friday.
If you're listening to this, we're going to have a poll up on our Twitter account. We'll tell Emily. And then, yeah, so vote there on which movie you'd like covered for next week's episode.
That's right. And Molly...
Choose between...
Oh, sorry.
Four non-bonds.
In the morning and I step outside, I take a big breath and I get real high, and I scream to the top of my lungs, what's going bond?
Got anything to plug, Molly?
Just my Spermcast, guys.
You guys, check this out.
Spermcast. You can, find it anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Molly, thank you for going on this James Bond adventure with us.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
And wading into the soft, warm, salty waters of the mangrove swamp of Crab Key.
I am honored to be here. This has been very exciting for me, especially to meet Matt.
Oh, listen, she's heard many of my trials and tribulations.
I love his.
Regarding
sperm.
Sperm.
I almost called it a web series.
It is. It's a web series available in audio form. Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure. Tune in if you want to hear us try to make a baby. We're still going.
Yeah.
You could start at episode 1, jump to episode 87, and we're still trying.
Well, fingers crossed, because you're back in the fray
now. We're back in it. Yeah. We're back in the saddle again, guys.
So check out Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure and Molly Hockey's Spermcast. And I'm starting a new one called Ovaries and Underies, where I don't know what I do. I just got the title and I'm working out how I'm going to make that work.
Talk to Amanda about it. Okay. She can probably help on that one.
All right, you're probably right. Thank you, Molly.
Thanks, guys.
And James Bonding
will return. Ovaries and Ivory. And you just play piano songs
and
about trying to have a baby.
Go together in perfect.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the Improv Fantasy Podcast, Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You want to see my collection of men corpses and one woman?
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.